You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. I'm Kimberly Adams in for Lizzie O'Leary. There were some major shifts this week in the role the United States plays in the world. The Trump administration showed a new openness to talks with North Korea, but new, tighter restrictions on global trade. This is Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Kimberly Adams, in for Lizzie O'Leary. If you've been paying attention to the news at all this week, it's been a doozy. President Trump's chief economic advisor, Gary Cohn, announced he was resigning. And then on Thursday, there were those new tariffs on steel and aluminum.
We want to build our ships. We want to build our planes. We want to build our military equipment with steel, with aluminum from our country. And now we're finally taking action to correct this long overdue problem.
The tariffs are a major concern for U.S. trade partners, but President Trump says these measures will be good for the country.
I think in the end, we're going to have a lot of great jobs. We're going to have a lot of great companies all coming back into our country.
A term you'll hear a lot around this move is protectionism, the kind of trade policy that protects domestic interests over promoting international trade. To discuss the tariffs and what protectionism might mean for the U.S., we have Julie Niemann. She's with the financial analysis and advice firm Smithmore in St. Louis, Missouri. I asked her about the history of protectionist measures in the U.S.
Well, for the most part, it has been with large industries where you have large unions at stake and a lot of votes. Protectionism is almost always pushed by voter pressure. And that's how it basically comes about. There was only one time that it actually was necessary because we did not have a manufacturing industry. And World War II effectively made us into a manufacturing powerhouse. But in virtually every other period of time when we've put protectionism on, initially, it was to protect an infant industry and try and nurture that. The way that we're looking at the global economic powerhouse now, everybody is manufacturing what is cost effective for them. And they're giving up manufacturing of things that are no longer are cost effective. Much of what we do now is all value added, is all intellectual. So what we're farming out and what we're buying from other people is where their cost of labor is lower and where they have a competitive advantage to bring things over to export to us. This benefits the entire globe. So protectionism basically kills global growth.
But that argument works so long as everybody in the rest of the world is on good terms with us and wants to continue trading with us.
Well, trade talks are very important, and that you have to have tough, level playing fields. And that's a constant thing because everybody wants to beggar your neighbor. But right now, what it does basically do is make all of your trading partners highly anxious. And the biggest thing we're looking at now, this is very clearly directed at our friends and not at our enemies. Take a look at Russia, for example. They're major exporters of aluminum to us. Trump could have put a tariff on specifically Russian aluminum, but instead it goes to absolutely everybody. The same way with getting steel from China. China doesn't actually export much steel to us. They export a large amount of steel both to Canada and to Korea, two of our major trading partners, and they do export to us. So in the process, what we're doing is hurting our trading partners, hurting our friends here. And all of them have said right across the board, they will retaliate in kind and very quickly if this continues on in this direction. We have the potential to have a trade war here, which would do nobody any good. The probability at this point, though, is there's probably a lot of talk as opposed to actual action, but it does cause damage and lack of trust in the process here.
But Julie, President Trump is moving ahead on this. He signed this Section 232 tariffs on steel and aluminum. Why do you think that this still may not manifest in a more protectionist trade policy?
Well, President Bush actually did this on the steel industry as well, and then reversed it very shortly afterwards, simply from a tremendous amount of pressure and new information coming in. So I would expect to see something like that happen as more pressure came on and was reversed. You would use some negotiation, some tit for tat came out of it. In other words, there would be something that would provide a little face cover for why you're reversing your course on it. But I would expect it to be reversed in pretty short order.
What might a more protectionist U.S. trade policy look like in our globalized economy?
If we were to actually implement these protective tariffs, we would see more categories as well. It will, where it starts with aluminum and steel, you're probably going to see expand to other things. You know, it could be in electronics. It could be in certain key elements that we import in. You could basically put it almost any manufactured good. So the process here can absolutely hit the silly season because every single move will be met with retaliation and it will be blow by blow. That's something we won't get into.
How might that affect the overall landscape of global trade, not just what affects us?
If we actually get into a global trade war, which truthfully is highly unlikely at this point in time, cooler heads will prevail. So you're going to see a lot of argument first and then cooler heads will prevail. But the ultimate outcome is if you had global protectionism and global trade war, you would see a huge reversion to a nationalistic temperament that happens to be out there where everybody closes the doors, pull back in, attempt to resurrect industries that don't currently exist or at the risk of tapering off. You will see a lot of money misspent and misallocated to industries they shouldn't be trying to resurrect. It keeps inflation significantly lower for the rest of the world when you have free trade.
Who are the winners and losers of a more protectionist America?
In the very short run, the laborers who see industry picking up in the protected industries are the winners, but that's a very short duration. The immediate losers are usually the consumers, simply because the cost of everything goes up and it creates inflation around the world. So costs really go up, efficiency goes down. So ultimately, it's the consumer who suffers.
Julie Niemann is an analyst at Smith Moore in St. Louis. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Some countries embrace protectionism to preserve certain domestic industries or to limit the influence of foreign companies. For a look at how protectionist policies play out in China, I'm joined by Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Kimberly.
So how open is China's market?
Well, if you take a walk around the streets here in Shanghai, you'll see major U.S. brands, KFC, McDonald's, Starbucks. So you get the impression that it's very open. But China does have some tariffs on U.S. products. For example, there has been a ban on American poultry, egg imports because of concerns over avian influenza. It also has import quotas. For example, less than 40 foreign films can be shown in theaters in China per year. Most of the movies come from Hollywood, but that also means that there's a lot of piracy. So the film Black Panther, for example, came out in China's theaters over the weekend. But guess what? Yes, we've already found a pirated copy. So it's not so easy to get pirated copies because of a government crackdown, but certainly it's not that hard either.
Okay, so are those the only types of restrictions that foreign companies face in China?
No. A lot of barriers actually come from government regulations, whether explicit or implicit. So let's stick to the film industry for a second. Now, on top of the import quota for foreign films, studios, Hollywood studios, only get 25% of the box office revenues, which is low compared to other countries. And then there are areas that the film studios have absolutely no say in. For example, when do their movies get played? There are unofficial blackout periods, basically when people have time to go to the theaters in China. Only domestic films are played. And so these are the types of official and unofficial rules that happens in almost every industry, but especially in strategic ones, for example, financial services, telecom, car manufacturing, agriculture. In these industries, American companies are forced to operate in joint ventures. And this is the reason why President Trump says China is not playing fair when it comes to trade, because Chinese companies can, for the most part, operate relatively freely in the U.S. The same cannot be said of American companies in China.
So that's a different kind of protectionism, but it sounds like it's really tough to do business in China. Isn't the Chinese government worried that this is going to keep companies away?
The short answer is no, because the market here is just too big to ignore. Look at Google. 10 years ago, I could access the search engine, although it was a bit slow in China. And then Google exited. Left in 2010 over censorship and cyber attack issues. Everything in Google is now blocked in China.
So, Jennifer, is China making any moves to change this dynamic?
They have said that they want to open up to foreign players. They have, for example, lifted foreign ownership limits on a very lucrative area, financial services. But what American companies have said is that these reforms are too little, too late, and that sometimes by the time they've lifted these restrictions, the market is already saturated by local competitors. And that's why there's a current U.S. investigation on whether the Chinese government is forcing American companies to transfer their technology to their local partners. For example, if you look at tech giants Alibaba and Tencent, they can own their own data center and cloud computing storage in Silicon Valley. But Apple, they had to partner with a government-owned cloud storage provider here. So that's why Trump's administration has said that this relationship between U.S. and China is not fair.
Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak in Shanghai. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you.